Hey, it's Andrew, and I want to thank all of you for listening and supporting the show. We'd love it if you'd take a moment to leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe. The link is in our show notes. In return, we'll shout you out on the podcast, and if you give us your Instagram handle, we'll link to you on our social media as a token of our gratitude.
Good morning, afternoon, and good evening to our listeners around the world. We have breaking news concerning a suspected act of compassion. We're still gathering information as it comes in, but the individual is also accused of inspiring large groups of people, being open-minded, committing acts of kindness, and displaying signs of authenticity. Stay tuned as we give you all the breaking details on your source for all the news that matters.
Yoga Talk Pod with Andrew Gordon.
Stephanie Toller, how are you today? Welcome to Yoga Talk Pod.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing great.
You are actually sort of in my neck of the woods. We're located in Charlotte, North Carolina, and you are in Marshall, which I believe is up by Asheville?
Yeah, it's about 20 minutes away from Asheville, north.
Beautiful up there.
Yeah, it's really nice here. It's tropical almost right now. It feels a lot like South America here. It's kind of crazy. I'm new to the area, so it's taken me by surprise a little bit.
Oh, okay. How long have you been up there for?
I moved here in January. Well, I moved to Asheville in October.
Yeah.
And then ended up in Marshall 2 months later.
Well, yeah, and Asheville is a big place for yoga. Of course, the Asheville Yoga Center is up there. And yeah. The other, Art of Living, is the big retreat center there. And I know
I
you
think
do... Yeah.
Are they in Asheville? I thought they were in Boone, but I'm not really sure.
I lump them all together.
Oh, okay.
When you're coming
there
from,
are a lot. There are a lot around.
Yeah, I mean, and when you're in Charlotte, you're just like, we're going to the mountains. Now that could be Chimney Rock. That could mean Boone. That could mean Crowder's, which is like, you know, the Bunny Hill of mountains.
Yeah, makes sense.
So where were you before that? Or let's even go further. Where are you originally from?
Well, I was an Army brat growing up, so I've kind of been on the move my whole life.
Wow. Okay. You want to list off a couple of cities?
Sure. You know, as a youth, I lived in Germany when I was really young. Well, it was like Virginia, Georgia, Germany,
wow.
Indiana, Alaska, and then I graduated from high school in Seattle. And then from there, you know, I kept moving too. I joined the Air Force. So I was moving a lot with the military. And yeah, and then I got out and was in Seattle for a while. Yeah, I kind of have a gypsy soul, you know. But
well,
most
yeah.
recently, I was living in Ecuador. Yeah.
You didn't have a choice, really, to have a gypsy
right.
soul. You know, I've met people that were quote-unquote army brats. I'm hesitant to use that label because, you know, the word brat and the connotation that goes with it. I'm not an army brat, so I'm not going to call someone else that. I don't have that card, you know, the membership card.
Yeah.
But I'm always curious, and I don't think I've ever asked anyone this question. What is it like, you know, how do you function and deal with that moving around from base to base?
Yeah.
And from what I understand, this I have asked, like the living situation. So I believe you do live on a base if you're overseas.
Yep. Yeah, we lived on base in Germany. You know, I was really young, so that one's a little tougher for me to remember.
Mm-hmm.
After that, we were living in, you know, normal suburban kind of situations. Sometimes
yeah.
apartments, sometimes houses, you know, just outer skirts. But it was really tough growing up, actually. I had a lot of insecurity about who I was, and I didn't have any grounding, you know, and I was too young to really understand those concepts, and they weren't taught to me. So my youth is pretty difficult, really, but as an adult now, and especially with yoga and other practices, you know, that's kind of, it's become more of a strength now. You know, I can move into a new situation pretty easily with grace.
Yeah.
And adapt. Yeah. And I'm not fearful. You know, that's the thing. It's allowed me to do a lot that people aren't willing to do, you know, like move to Asheville on a whim, or before this it was Ecuador. You know, I just kind of can go someplace and be there and adapt to the culture. And I find it really exciting and stimulating. You know, you learn so much. And I'd say overall, it's contributed to a pretty open mind. And I'm thankful for that.
And I promise I'm going to get to all that of your current situation. And I think that, you know, without even planning to touch upon you being an army brat, I think it really contributes to your gypsy nature, of course, duh. Yeah. However, now you're actually choosing the moves, whereas as a child, you were not choosing the moves. So what was it like to always be the new kid? Obviously, not easy, but did
not
you go-
easy.
Not easy, but did you go to regular schools or was it just for the army people?
No, I went to regular schools. I went to a lot of different public schools. Okay. You know, there was a lot of nervousness before mm-hmm. the first day. I'm sure most kids go through that, but going to a brand new school where you don't know anyone, it's a little less exciting and a little more scary. But, you know, I am pretty confident now. Like I learned pretty quickly to just walk in and smile and do my best. And, you know, teachers loved me. Because I was mature, I think, from all the moving and adapting. And
makes total sense.
So I often ended up the teacher's pet, you know, which might go well or not well with kids. Sometimes I was popular. Sometimes I was picked on. You know, it ran the gamut, really.
Yeah. Well, kids in general, you know, especially I'm sure in middle school, it's, you know,
middle school's the worst. I don't envy kids at all. And I'm so thankful to be an adult, you know?
Someone said to me once, and I'll never forget it because it just made so much sense. They said, you know, no one ever says, looking back at their lives, gosh, you know, I just reflect and reminisce and I just really miss middle school. You know, it's like maybe elementary school, maybe high school, the good old days, but no one's ever like, man, take me back to middle school.
True. It's the worst time. Everybody's hormones are raging. Nobody knows what's going on. They're being told what to do, but then being told to be responsible. It's like, you know, which way do you go?
Yeah. And another thing I think about in your situation is now that you are carving your own path of travel and, you know, creating where you want to plant down and root next, it's like whatever we didn't have in our childhood, that is what we make our life's mission as adults as. We seek to, So, I mean, you know, in my case, it may have been attention, apparently.
Yeah. Hey man, it's you know, we all got our things and look at what it's doing for the world. You're sharing good messages. It's beautiful.
Well, thank you. And I got to say, I'm so excited to have you on. I'm not even scratching the surface with you yet. I have a lot to talk to you about. Awesome. We'll keep it within a reasonable amount of time. We usually never go over an hour, so we're good. So you've played a lot of roles in your life. I'd like to walk through them one at a time.
Oh, boy. All right. So
let's talk about being a soldier. First of all, you were in the Air Force. You've already mentioned that. So how did you end up in the Air Force? And tell me about more of that experience, your role in the Air Force, and
well, you know, I had kind of a tough upbringing, and the military wasn't so scary for me. I was pretty aware of what that was like because my dad was in the Army. It was really at his suggestion that I went for it. I didn't like my home life. It had been pretty traumatizing. I'd been kind of, in addition to moving around, there were other, you know, things at play that were difficult for me. And I just was anxious to get out on my own and do my own thing. And at the beginning of my junior year, I went to my guidance counselor and asked her, hey, you know, is there any way I can graduate early and join the military? Because my dad had suggested that as a way of, you know, getting out early. And she suggested I go to community college and take extra classes. So my junior year of high school, I went to high school and then I went to a job at Sears. And then I hopped on the bus and went to community college for night classes and I graduated a year early. Yeah, I was pretty motivated. I graduated early and I ended up, you know, joining the military.
Now, you joined the Air Force. Now, you guys are the smarties, I hear. So you got to be
pretty smart
to be in the Air Force.
Well, it's, you know, there are smart people in every branch. The requirements are higher.
Let me pause on that. I'm not saying that every other branch of the military, that they're not intelligent, but I've heard that the Air Force it is a very high requirement of intelligence.
It's difficult. Yeah, it's more difficult to get into for sure.
What were you doing in the Air Force?
I did a couple of things. At first, you know, I just kind of went for the first thing available, and I ended up in personnel, which is a very administrative, it's like HR.
Yeah.
And I hated it. You know, I enjoyed interacting with people, but I don't love pushing paper, and that's what it felt like to me. So I ended up cross-training into, it's called SATCOM, Satellite Communications, where I was I learned basic electronic principles, and my real job ended up being a little more theoretical. You know, I never really worked with satellites, and we did a lot more like local communication stuff, like installing cable for internet or phone or PA systems, that kind of thing. So I did a lot of wiring, but I did learn a lot, and it was very valuable. Yeah.
I bet.
And actually, a lot of what I learned in electronic principles informed my knowledge of yoga to some degree, you know, as far as energy and physics and how sound waves and light waves work. It was really pretty amazing to get that connection later in life.
That makes a lot of sense. Sound, vibration, yeah. Energy. There's something to that.
Totally.
You know,
Even the concept of grounding, you know, grounding energy, we have lightning rods in order to ground excess energy, and our bodies are essentially that, and we can use them in the same way.
You know,
it's pretty amazing.
My wife and I just hooked up new ceiling light fixtures for our kitchen. We redid some of the things in there. And yesterday we hooked up one of the fixtures, and when we turned on the light, it didn't work. And I just thought it was so interesting when we found out what the problem was. It was that we didn't wrap the wire around the grounding screw. And I said, isn't that so intelligent that it won't let you turn it on because it's not grounded?
Yeah.
Like, there you go, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, so cool.
From the Air Force, you did go to college, and you went to University of Washington, and you got a bachelor's in entrepreneurship. How does that work? Because really, an entrepreneur, how do you learn? You know what I mean?
The bachelor's was in business administration, and entrepreneurship was essentially like the pathway. It was considered an option. And okay. So there were the basic business classes, finance, marketing, economics, all of that stuff. But then we also studied, you know, what's it look like to run your own business? What's it look like to raise money? You know, are the legal requirements for that? And we actually ended up running a business in the last semester, which was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. See, I like stuff that's actually practical, except it's not your money on the table.
Yeah. Yeah. UW was a good school. So I'm really glad I went there.
Except you're playing with the house's money. You're not really playing with your own. So, but you did actually take the role. I'm going through your roles and I'm interweaving it into your story of small business owner next. And you were self-employed for a company called Sage Clean. So I'm guessing, was that a franchise or is that you? Is that straight out?
No, that was me. That was me. I got the idea to start an eco-friendly cleaning company, and that was in 2006. And that was before it was a thing. And it did really well in Seattle, and it was awesome. And I started that at the beginning of that entrepreneurship program. So I was applying my learnings as I was going along.
That's awesome. I mean, you did some great things during that run, and you had it for 7 years. And that got you really into the mindset of training a staff. And obviously you had the scheduling and billing and paperwork experience, you said, from the Air Force, customer relations, and all these beautiful things that I know you're parlaying now into your yoga business and things that you're doing with retreats, which I will get to. But you also worked in corporate, okay? So corporate is a lot different than being a small business owner or self-employed. So tell me about your corporate experience. I believe the company was named HomeJoy.
I'm, first off, just so impressed with all of your research. Thank you. That's awesome.
That's my area of expertise is I'm a researcher. I'm nosy.
Yep,
I have a Jewish mother, okay? So I have someone that's like a secret agent always looking to find out about my life. So I'm always...
Oh, wow.
I'm just reversing.
You've learned from the best.
Oh, my gosh, yes. You have no idea. I have to block her on all social media, and she like makes up... No, I don't think she's ever made up fake screen names, but I wouldn't put it past.
That is too funny. Wow.
I'm the Yenta of interviewers.
I love it.
All right.
So you
are like the boss woman of this company. You're the Southeast Regional Operations Manager. That's a high position in any company, you know, to be a regional ops manager.
It was a lot of responsibility. It really was. And it felt like it too.
Can you talk about some of the things that you liked and then some of the things that were not in your wheelhouse or that you didn't enjoy? I'm not talking about bashing the job or the company. I wouldn't want you to do that, but just, you know, some of the pros and cons in your mind.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, the culture in general, it was really fun and exciting. Let me start with that. It was really fun and really exciting, and it really pushed me, and I learned a lot, and I met a lot of interesting people, and I got to travel quite a bit. I was on the road a lot with that job, which was fun in a lot of different ways, you know?
Stephanie, what is HomeJoy?
HomeJoy is no longer around, but they made a big splash while they were. Yeah. HomeJoy was a startup in San Francisco. They'd come out of Y Combinator, and essentially it was an online service. You know, it was like the Uber of house cleaning. You know, you could go on and you could book a cleaning pretty quickly. And then they expanded into some other services. Yeah, it was actually a perfect fit because I had had the cleaning company. And they were going into that, you know, industry, but from a tech perspective, which was really interesting. And then I had the business degree as well. So it ended up being a pretty good fit, and they needed somebody to travel. And, you know, I'm pretty good at that. So it was good. It kind of fed my, you know, fed some of those passions, and it fed my ego quite a bit, you know, because I was had a good title, you know, and I was proud of that.
It is a good title, yeah.
And I was making good money, and I had a lot of external validation feeding my ego. That's really what was going on.
You did. Now, I'm going to jump to your next position, which was the last one before you said no more corporate. So that was director of operations for Convoy Incorporated, which is out in San Francisco. I know that you said the other company, HomeJoy, is in San Francisco, but you were based out of Miami. What were you doing as the director of ops for Convoy? What kind of company is that?
Yep. So it was, you know, kind of with the trends. It was basically on-demand IT services. So now it was guys coming out to fix your computer, really basic stuff, you know, older people who needed a hand getting their printer hooked up or their
That's what my wife's company does.
Oh, really? Yeah.
For the last 20
years,
they've had a business. Yeah. I mean, they're still in business. And it's like, you know, installing workstations and, you know, security. It's more than just the printer, but it's basically what you're talking about.
And there's definitely a market there if you do it right. You know, it's essentially Geek Squad. That's really what it is.
Yes, yes. And
hopefully, you know, with higher caliber technicians.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I think a thing about, and you can relate to this as a small business owner, and I can as well, and I think everyone, you know, just in general, it's about relationships that you build with your clients and also with your vendors. And I think that's one thing that her dad has done well, and that's what a company has been able to be.
You have to be able to play both sides. It's the truth. You know, you have to understand the client's mindset, and you have to understand the mindset of the person going out there. And you have to kind of be that bridge between the two and make sure they're speaking the same language.
Yes. You know? Yeah. All right. So we are moving right along nicely. I'm going to go back up to the role playing.
Okay. All right.
So we talked about small business owner. We talked about corporate executive. We talked about soldier. Then you have a bunch of other things. I'm going to get to yoga teacher and world traveler in a little bit, but you were a pothead, which I can certainly connect with you on. So I don't imagine that was during your years in the Air Force.
No, that would have been a little tough. you know, but sometimes actually that would creep in. I'm not perfect. But yeah, I lived on the West Coast. Everybody was smoking weed.
Oh, they were on the East Coast too.
Yeah. You know, and for me, especially when I was younger, I found that it was able to help me move past a lot of stuff to continue being productive with my life. Yeah. You know, and I have a lot of really interesting experiences with it. I started to, you know, honestly, all drug use, everything I've ever done, it has been a spiritual experience for me. It hasn't been about really partying at all. A lot of times it's been about, you know, connecting with something else and opening my mind to what's possible and, you know, realizing that there's more to this reality than what's, you know, immediately perceivable. So yeah, definitely that has played a role in my life.
You know, it's interesting, and I may get some pushback on this because I'm not going to say that I have this on a document in front of me that I'm reading off of, but I did hear, and maybe I verified it, that the founding fathers of this country, you know, when they wrote the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, like, they were all coked up. Like, it was just like, why?
Really? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. Carl Jung was really into cocaine, you know?
Yeah.
He wrote a paper on it. So was Freud. It's just, you know, I have some interesting experiences with that as well. And, you know, they weren't what people think it is. And I'm definitely not condoning anything. Everybody has to pick their own path. I'm just sharing mine.
I think,
you know? And
I'm in agreement with you, Stephanie. And I think that drugs, like anything else, can be used in a way that is beneficial, or it can be used in a way that's harmful. The same way you could drive a car. You could use it as a weapon and drive it into people, or you could use it as transportation. So I don't necessarily think it's the drugs that are bad in most cases. There are some that are just, you know, crazy. I mean, you know, that would seemingly
not meant for human
take over your life.
Right.
Yeah, you know, but I think, you know, there are other drugs that are very similar to the ones that are prescribed. And it's just, it comes down to...
they are. In fact, they study plants from the Amazon and find ways to mimic them for prescription drugs. It's insane. Why don't we just grow the stuff?
Well,
you know, let's be natural.
I have an
easy answer. Well, we all know why. Yeah. We all know why.
It's the S.
That's a whole other... We'll be on for 5 hours if we keep going.
Let's just say dollar sign, hashtag dollar sign, and you know,
truth.
Big farm. So anyway, from a pothead, you were a siren. What now? Am I thinking of a siren like wowie zow wow? Look at her, she's a siren.
I mean, kind of, you know, really like relating more to my sex appeal, identifying with that.
Okay.
Yeah, just for context, for anyone listening, this is on my webpage. I just kind of made a description of, you know, different things I've moved through in my life. But yeah, siren was one of them, you know, very much feeding off of male attention and female attention, whatever, just feeling good in that way. You know, like I've referenced my childhood, I just didn't have a lot of self-worth. And I spent pretty much all of my teenage years and all of my 20s and part of my 30s, you know, kind of moving past that whole external piece and really cultivating it from within. You know, it took a long time. I had a pretty big shift, you know, maybe 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of past all this, you know. I don't need it. I don't need that external validation. It does feel good to be recognized.
Sure.
But it doesn't define who I am anymore, you know.
Right. No, that it's, of course. I mean, look, I love my wife. I think she's beautiful on the outside, but really I think she's just as beautiful on the inside. And our physical looks eventually, you know, they fade.
They fade.
You know, and
yeah.
Really what matters is on the inside of who a person
That's
is.
Right.
And I truly, people might be rolling their eyes that I'm saying that, but I truly mean it. I swear, you know.
100%. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think most people agree. And I think the aging process is so beautiful because it's sort of like a process of letting the insides show.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like what you reveal. You reveal in the world, you know, over time. What are you going to reveal?
You can't hide behind the outside anymore. So you list yourself as a daredevil. I'm going to jump through these next ones quick and then dig into the yoga worlds. But so daredevil, tell me about that phase of your life and what is the craziest thing you did?
Oh, well, just, you know, things like skydiving and just trying to get that rush, that adrenaline, you know, I took trapeze classes for a little while. That was really fun. Paragliding was amazing. Just, you know, daredevil kind of activities. They're kind of run of the mill these days. Honestly, a lot of people do them, but man, it takes a lot to jump out of a plane and it really gets your blood rushing.
You know, I was thinking about this the other day about why people do it. And it was coming from an objective point of view because I've never done it and I don't have a desire. However, now again, I'm speculating on this. of course, it's adrenaline and you get the high.
Yeah.
But perhaps there's also an element of I face death, the possibility of death or the illusion or, you know, feeling that I'm going to die because I'm falling out of a plane. I'm free falling for a certain amount of time. And then I survived. And then when you come out of that experience, you're like, wow, I have this whole new perspective on appreciation and gratitude for life because I could have died just there.
There's that. You know, it's really complex. There's that. There is jumping out of a plane and seeing, I was in Seattle when I did it, and seeing 360 degree views of the mountains. Wow, the Olympics and the Cascades. I could see it all. I could see into valleys. You know, there was definitely this like awe-inspired moment where I was just, you know, I lost time, right? It was a timeless moment where I looked around and I was like, wow, just really inspired.
Why couldn't someone just rescued Kurt Cobain and threw him out of a plane with a parachute and just threw the needle away and just kept throwing him out of planes to keep his rush, his dopamine levels
well, so
high.
So that's, you know, I think it kind of comes from the same place, honestly.
Sure.
You know, especially as Americans, we're out of touch with our bodies as a baseline, okay? As a baseline, we in general are pretty out of touch with our bodies. We're in our minds. We're in the upper chakras. We've left the lower chakras as a culture. There's that. And then on top of that, if you've experienced any sort of a trauma, you know, it's really easy to disconnect from your body and you don't feel as much. And then it ends up being these like thrill-seeking behaviors and drug addictions, really. At least that's what my research has turned up. I've been a little bit of a psych junkie.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I think it was coming from for me, was just, you know, feeling something.
The brain is fascinating and psychology was my minor and I'm totally with you on that. I'm still, you know, of course, in casual self-study. If something interests me, I'm going to read up on it. I mean, our brain is the best computer. You can't make
incredible.
A better computer than our brain.
The whole body, really.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Of course, to imagine the capabilities of our body and how it's designed so perfectly is just mind-blowing, for lack of a better word. But this is a whole spiritual conversation, and that's the next thing you became, was a spiritualist. So you described this, that while you've had some amazing experiences along the way and little regret about the endeavors, some we just talked about, none of them resulted in a type of stable and deeply happiness you define as our heritage. Can I ask you, what do you mean by that?
I think our natural state is really obscured, again, by conditioning and the culture and personal experiences. But at our baseline, we are joyful beings. You know, we're filled with light and love. And it's our heritage. It's our heritage to have that. You know, just for me, it's about God.
Yeah.
You know, there's validation simply in being the creation of God. Or a creation, you know, and part of the greater whole. And I think that's really beautiful. And I think that is our heritage. And it's underneath all of that other stuff. And my seeking, you know, my thrill seeking, my drug use, my traveling, all of those things, it wasn't feeding that, you know, it was feeding the thing that was obscuring that. It was feeding the ego.
Yes.
You know, I was looking for validation, but it wasn't validating me. It was validating these behaviors that could stop at any time. You know, if I identify as my role as Southeast operational or regional manager, you know, and then I'm laid off, what am I left with?
Exactly.
You know, if I define myself as an athlete and I lose a leg, what am I left with? You know, and that's really the place I came to.
I really think that you touch on something that is so important, especially in our society, is that anything on the external and also anything that can be taken away from you should never be something that you hold on to and cling to.
Yeah, but we do it unconsciously. It's not that we're even aware of it. You know, even now I'm sure I'm clinging to things that are out of my awareness because it's the journey through life,
sure.
You know, and we evolve. And we realize, oh, okay, I'm not my job. Oh, okay, I'm not my body. You know, that was a big one. That's part of me,
yeah.
You know, but it's actually just a fraction, you know, it's like not the whole piece. There's body, mind, spirit, you know?
Totally. And I think that's something with yoga is that people just associate the asanas to yoga, but there's so much more.
Right.
You know, yoga could just be sitting down and meditation as part of it. So we could do
this
yoga.
This is what brought me back to the United States, was exactly this. We have a gross misunderstanding of what yoga is here in the United States. And
we don't
approach it with any reverence, really. And we abuse it, and we use it for the wrong reasons. It's really, we've Americanized the shit out of it. We've done a really good job with that.
You know, I don't know if you saw, you probably didn't see this, but I did something on my Instagram and I said that I was kidnapped. And the frequency of the podcast was taken over by Yoganan from the planet Pakasana. And he was not going to release me until I shared the message of how they practice yoga up on planet Pakasana. And then I had a follow-up video where I was an animated floating head, which took on my facial expressions, which is bizarre. Thank you, Adobe Character Animator, which I used. And I said that I'm just a floating head because Yoganan wanted me to say that you could practice yoga without your body and to share that message with you, and then they'll let me go. So here I am. I have my body intact, but yeah, I was able to.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
Again, you know, it could be some drug use in my past. It could be some wacky imagination. I don't know. Anyway.
It's like, all the same.
Our mutual friend, Penelope, she said to me, where did you come up with that? I'm like, I don't fucking know. Like, who knows? So you found yoga in your late 20s. I would like you to take me to that moment. Describe your first class. What did it feel like before and then after? You know, everyone remembers.
Yeah. Yeah, the yoga journey. Yoga has been my most stable and loving relationship.
Amen.
It's really been special. Yeah, it's my first class. So funny, because my understanding of yoga obviously has shifted quite a bit.
Sure.
And this was very physical. You know, my first class was a Bikram class.
Ugh.
And
sorry.
Yeah, I know.
The name doesn't to me. I'm sorry.
I know. But it is what it was, you know. And I went with a girlfriend, you know, that mentioned it. A new studio had opened up, and I had never done yoga before. Actually, I had done a Rodney Yee video that I picked up at Costco when I was like, you know, 22 or something. Did it a couple of times, thought it was cool, and never did it again. So I ended up at a Bikram class, and you know, I love heat. So that was perfect. I was living in Seattle. I was happy to be in a hot room, and I made it through the entire sequence. And, you know, they make such a big deal if it's your time, you know, your first time, just stay in the room, you know, go into child's pose, whatever you
need.
Oh,
yeah. I almost threw up, and they didn't let me out of the room. And this was before I knew that I could have the right to just say, screw you, and walk out. And I was
they literally didn't let you out. That's messed up.
No. Like, there was a teacher and any assistant, and I was like, I'm going. And like, she's like, no, just take child's pose. And I was like, are you freaking?
Oh my God.
Needless to say, I never went back there.
Wow. But yeah, obviously not.
No.
I did not have, my experience was good. You know, I made it through the whole thing. And so I was really proud of that. And I felt amazing when I was done. You know, I didn't realize, of course, at that time that things were aligning, you know, on more subtle levels than just the physical body. But I was pretty proud of the practice, and I felt good, and I wanted to go back. And it was a, you know, 2-week come as much as you can. And so I did. And that turned into like a kind of a 2-year obsession where I was just in the studio all the time. And I had recently broken up with a guy, and that was another thing that I realized, was I hadn't thought about my garbage for an hour and a half. 90 minutes passed, and my mind never once went to my personal life. And I really dug that, and that really kept me coming back.
I love it. You just answered my question. I mean, I was going to ask you, you come from a life as self-described as being somewhat dark at times, and you moved into a place of light, which yoga really is the journey from darkness to light. And I was going to ask you, what was one of the biggest changes for you moving into a place of light? I think you just, well, I know you just definitely gave me an example. Is there anything else you'd like to add to that?
I mean, to go a little bit further, it's embodiment. Right. It's not just that the mind was at rest. It's that I was feeling my body and tuning into my own thing. Right. And you don't even realize that. You can't put words to it. But now I realize that's what it is. And that's what I try to teach, is feel everything from within, you know, from the body. The body is telling us so much.
It really is. And I you know, that's when it comes back to, it's not about doing the most advanced asana. There's nothing wrong. Like, I love challenging myself when I was into that, you know, like getting into different poses. Yeah. And it's like, wow, yeah, I can do that with my body. That's amazing. There's nothing right. wrong. There's nothing wrong with that. But let's not get
it's
confused.
Part of the path.
Right. But let's not, you know? But let's not confuse it with that is the path, because that's where the confusion right. is and the distortion.
That's the confusion. And that's what brought me back here to the States. I had a teacher in India say to me, he goes, well, that's what you Americans do. Yoga is meant to forget about the body, to help you forget about the body, and you use it to obsess about the body.
That's insane.
And a light bulb went on and I went, wow. Like, I have had a gross misunderstanding of what's been going on, and so is my entire country, you know? Like, really, it's so different than what I thought it was. Thank God. But I think that coming into the physical body and having that asana and coming because you want to be sexy, you know, I think that's part of the path for some. And it's like whatever gets you on the mat, you know, and then yeah. from there it grows. You know, if you're a yogi, it takes over, as you know, as I know.
Well, Stephanie, I will say that for me, I was very heavy. And I was 60 pounds heavier, and emotionally I had a lot of bad stuff. And that's yeah. when I found yoga. So for me, the physical transformation yeah. and seeing that happen, it was powerful, and it was empowering.
Yeah.
It was empowering too. And it did feel right. good. And I felt this new sense of health, actually. And
yeah.
I won't say ego, like I'm strutting like a peacock, but you know, like, wow, look at this transformation that just happened. And
yeah.
how good I feel about myself, and that I was able to pull this
off. You should feel good about yourself. You know, we're meant to be healthy and vital, and that is something to be proud of. That's
right.
okay.
But then as you're saying, I agree, the longer you go with it, your practice changes and evolves with you yeah. as a person. And for me, you know, gosh, 2002, about 16 years into it at this point, right now, yoga is whatever I need on that day. Like you know what I mean?
That's
like
right.
so it's either meditation, or it's like maybe I do need a power practice, or maybe I just feel like stretching my neck and my back. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
it's changed a lot than what it used to
yeah.
be. But I think at the time it's what I needed, and I'm not gonna knock it, but we should yes, let's point out, you know, being on a mountain with the sun setting behind you and taking a picture for Instagram, that's not, you know, in some sort of crazy pose with a quote, because you have a pretty picture and you can do an advanced pose, that you are designated the right to be this intelligent, deep writer
right.
with a quote underneath every picture you post. Shut the fuck up. You know, I mean,
yeah.
come on. So you're not Socrates, because you can go into fucking handstand over a mountain, you know?
It's true. It's true.
So, speaking of writing, you have been diving into writing in your path on your spiritual journey, because it's a source of healing for you, which has been teaching yoga and then meditating, and now you're writing. What kind of writing are you doing?
I've been doing a lot of different writing. I write a lot of poetry. You know, I always have. I've always written. I just haven't shared so freely and openly. And I haven't really written as much in like essay format, which I've been doing a lot of.
Yeah.
And it feels great. Yeah. So I've been sharing a lot on my blog. And then I've also been working on a book inspired by ayahuasca. It's a plant medicine.
Yeah. You're the second guest. The first guest I think I spoke to this season, not the second guest, talked about ayahuasca.
Oh, yeah.
And I would, no.
Big shift.
Yeah. No. Actually, I'm sorry. She spoke about peyote, but before her, there was someone who spoke about ayahuasca. So I did speak in depth about that experience to get knowledge about it from her. But I just want to ask you, and I'm just going to touch on it. Where did you do it, first of all?
I've done it in a number of places, actually. I was living in South America for a while, so I had opportunity to sit with a couple of different groups there in Colombia and in Ecuador. And then also in the United States, in Florida, there's actually a Church of Mother Earth.
I know
that
about it.
Uses ayahuasca as a sacrament. Yeah, Soul Quest. So I've done it there, too. And yeah, I've done a few different ceremonies, and it's been really powerful.
Can you just, for our audience and maybe for myself as well, just pinpoint the biggest benefit and reason that you would look at ayahuasca and your experience with it as transformative, just to take us into that world that we haven't been
boy.
In.
Yeah. Well, you know, she shows you your own psychology. You know, it's a tool for self-awareness. You see into the darkest recesses of your mind, which are, you know, mostly unconscious. Yeah. You know, it's in hiding, memories that are stored in there, you know, things that you unconsciously are hung up about, feel bad about, or maybe, like for me, self-worth. This was probably my most, I'm grateful for a lot of the experiences that I had, but I, you know, you don't know what you don't have until you have it. And I didn't realize that I had a very limited sense of self-worth. Mm. You know, I really, again, that external validation, this has been a big part of my life. And I had an experience where I was sitting in a field of light and it was the most beautiful thing I had ever seen. And I started thanking God. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you for letting me see this. I was just so grateful, so much gratitude. And then this voice comes forth, and it was a feminine voice, although I've experienced God in both the masculine and feminine.
Sure.
But a feminine voice came forth and said, "You're beautiful too."
Wow.
And
I love it.
Yeah. When you're under the influence of ayahuasca, you know, your default mode network goes away. Right. Yeah. So when a man, you know, I've had a lot of men through my life tell me I'm beautiful, but it never really landed, you know, and I didn't really know how to take it. But when God said it to me, you know, I understood that this wasn't about my physical appearance, although that's part of it too. We're all beautiful in our diversity.
Yes.
You know, the physical and then who I am, the light inside, you know, and I really felt it. I felt that sense of self-worth, you know, on a physical level in my body, in my cells. And that shifted everything for me.
That is so amazing.
Yeah, it gave me a reference point for that feeling, you know, and it gave me a pathway to get there too on a regular basis.
So,
you know, because now I do see the light inside of me, you know.
Is your experiences or experience with ayahuasca, did that really help you and facilitate this really life-changing transition out of corporate, okay, and into, again, being self-employed, which is nothing new to you. You did it in the past, but this time you're doing it as a yoga instructor and vegetarian chef for yoginistephanie.com, which is in Marshall, North Carolina. You've been at that for 2 years and 1 month. So you host all-inclusive yoga retreats in Marshall, North Carolina. Yeah. Now, just to pinpoint that on a map for people listening from all over the world, it's located in the Blue Ridge Mountains, about 20 miles north of Asheville, which is beautiful.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Yeah. And you were doing that previously on the Ecuador
coast. In Ecuador.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me more about that. Bring us into your current life and business and yoga.
Yeah, okay. So the shift to yoga. I was working corporate back at that job, Homejoy, where I had all that responsibility. And I went on a yoga retreat because I thought I was going to lose it. You know, I was like overworked, overstressed. I was so tired of everything. Called my boss. I was like, I need next week off. And that was it. I went to Costa Rica and I had this moment in a class where I looked at the teacher and I went, there are lovely young women teaching yoga all over the world in tropical locations for a living. What am I doing? What am I doing with my life? You know, why am I here? Because I'm stressed out and she's here because it's her choice.
Yeah.
You know, and I went back and I signed up for a yoga teacher training. You know, I had already been practicing for like 10 years and I quit my job and I did the YTT, you know, and then in the middle of all that, I was planning to shift to being a yoga teacher. And I had my first ayahuasca experience right around then where I did a lot of purging. I really did a lot of purging and I didn't really even understand at the time why I was so sick or what was coming out of me.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought I had a physical reaction, but now I realize it was just like all of this toxicity that was around my heart and my spirit that was coming out, you know, in a very physical and a very real way. So all of this happened. And then my mother died.
I'm sorry to hear that, because I know that crashed. was fairly recent. I'm sorry. I know that was.
Oh my God. Yeah, it was. Sorry. It was so, and it was so traumatic the way everything happened. And we don't need to go into it,
but I know.
Essentially, no, it's all good. I'm used to talking about it. It's a big part of my past, you know, but she passed away. And when that happened, it really forced me to reevaluate a lot of things. But at the same time, I didn't have the energy to make the switch. So I ended up in another job. I took the next job that came my way at the time. I was pretty highly desired because some news that HomeJoy had come out and recruiters were hitting me up left and right.
Oh, yeah. Your resume kicks ass. I would like to put my name on your resume and oppose you.
Thank you. You know, so a job easily floated my way and I found myself back in corporate for another, you know, I think it was 9 months or something before I finally made it to South America. But that ayahuasca experience, I think it really cleared a lot for me so I could go through my mother's death in the way that I did. Yeah. I very much submitted to the experience. And I don't know that I could have done that in the way that I did.
Now you had someone help you with it, right? There's a leader of those retreats. I mean, like you can't take ayahuasca by yourself. You can, but it's not suggested.
You know, and I have done that and I have realized that you really need somebody holding space.
Okay.
You know, in order to really dive deep and get the experience, you really need somebody there. I'm not sure how I feel.
Stephanie, I'm sorry. I'm so fascinated by this.
No.
How do they hold space? Like, how does that whole thing play out? I've never done
it. Well, you know, you can, if you're by yourself and you're under the influence of something, you know, there's this part of you that holds on to the environment around you so that if somebody comes into the room or knocks on your door or, you know, whatever, like you're still aware of the present space, which keeps you from diving fully within. And it keeps the experience very light. If you're in an environment where, you know, someone is there in case, you know, in case you need anything, you know, you need help getting to the bathroom, right? Yep, you need a new puke bucket because unfortunately that's a part of it. You know, you need whatever, somebody to talk you out of, you know, a scary place. You kind of need somebody there, you know, and it just allows you to fully immerse yourself in the experience.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. I needed to hear that myself and hopefully it was of benefit to the audience. I believe it would be. It's just, I hear about, you know, the leaders of the ayahuasca retreats or experiences, and I just wanted to know their role in particular with more detail. I've never had the clarity on that, so thank you.
They do a whole lot more than that, you know. They sing Icaros. It depends on where you do it, you know, depends on where you are in ceremony. If you're with a real shaman and they're singing Icaros, you know, they're these songs that guide the experience. Mm. And you can kind of ride them. So there's a lot more to it, but it's a lot like holding space in yoga. You know, the teacher is there worrying about the environment so that you can close your eyes in mountain pose and go within. You don't need to be concerned about what's going on in the room. You know,
I got a class coming up in about an hour that I'm going to teach. And I'm going to be like, hey, you all, listen, close your eyes. I got you. If anyone here is tripping out, if anyone smoked dust before this class, it's all good. You're cool.
Yeah.
I got you.
There you go. You got to be there for people.
All right. So, Stephanie, let's talk about how people can find you, what kind of retreats and services you offer. What are we looking at? If we want to hang out with Yogini Stephanie at yoginistephanie.com up in the mountains of Asheville.
Yeah. I do weekend retreats or almost every weekend, which is awesome. It's been doing well though. So a lot of them are booked, but I can always check dates. Yeah. It's been awesome. And I've only been here since January. It's great.
That's so good.
And you know, I think really what I'm doing here is showing people how to feel things from within and to trust themselves and to take care of themselves and to realize that self-care is not selfish and that these things lead to self-love, you know? And I think it's a really good reset. It's been fun. I get a lot of busy professionals that come through here and there are some really big shifts by the end of the weekend. I teach a lot of philosophy in addition to the physical classes. We do yoga nidra. We go on a hike. We do a sound meditation in the middle of a river. It's really, really nice.
You sold me.
You should come. Definitely come visit.
We're close enough. So I think my wife, Mary, and I will take a trip up there.
Yeah, you should. And the best part of it too is I'm in this charming little town. You wouldn't even believe how cute it is with all these little old timey shops, and there's a brewery across the street, and I'm in a renovated church that literally looks like a palace.
That's
it's
amazing.
So beautiful. Yeah, it's so pretty awesome.
Okay, on the down low, any ayahuasca going on there?
not right now. We'll see how things move through legislation, and maybe we can schedule another interview.
All right. Well, Stephanie, it's been so great speaking with you, and I really
thank you. You too.
Your generosity and your story and your energy and your path. And if anyone wants to find you, we'll put it up on the show notes, yoginistephanie.com, as well as your social media. We'll put up your Instagram and all of that good stuff. Thank you so much. Stephanie, for being
my pleasure. Thank you.
Yoga Talk Pod.
Yoga Talk Pod with Andrew Gordon.
Hey, it's Andrew. And we would love if you become part of the new Yoga Talk Pod squad. Just go to Patreon, patreon.com/yogatalkpod. 30% discount on all of our merchandise that we will have up in our shop, which is in the process of being built. We will give you, this I can guarantee, access to premium episodes every single week. So that means this week we'll do a special vlogcast for being part of the Yoga Talk Pod squad. It's our way of saying thank you by clicking on the Patreon page, which takes you to Yoga Talk Pod squad. We look forward to meeting you there.